Hi, this is Damien O'Doherty. We're here on the Lobby Pod with Center Maryland, and we're here with somebody special from the Baltimore region. It's been advocating for transit, transportation solutions, affordable housing solutions. His name's Brian O'Malley. He's with the Central Maryland Transportation Alliance. Welcome, Brian.
Thank you, Damien. Good to be on. Good to see you.
Tell me a little bit about what the CMTA is.
We are a nonprofit based at the Baltimore Community Foundation, founded in 2007 to improve transportation in the region. And our board is made up of a mix of folks from, they're all civic leaders, but they come from different sectors, philanthropy, corporations, other nonprofits who see transportation as critical to their missions.
So we're not limited to just transit. We're not, how do you view transportation in the region?
So transportation, of course, is how we get from A to B, but it has a powerful shaping force on all our lives. It contributes to the climate crisis. It's a major factor in equity and structural racism in our society, and can also be part of the solution to those things. And so we want to influence transportation decisions and make sure that it's part of making this region a better place to live.
You know, when I look at you, I think of somebody who is in a sort of a rare cast of advocates and leaders throughout the state, which are people that are vouching for progressive, not D or not R, but just progressive, moving forward, moving people, progressive values. You know, I think of you, I think of the teachers union, Cheryl Boast, I think of, Kim Coble, I think, an environmental stalwart. I think of all these different people that were fighting the fight for these words like transit, these words like Baltimore transportation, these words like TOD that were big in the lexicon of Baltimore policy 8 years ago, but have been sort of ignored. And there's only been a few voices that have been keeping that, keeping the power of those messages alive during sort of the Hogan experience. And I just wanted to recognize you for that.
That's an honor to be mentioned with those other names. We've been at this for quite a while, and we did shift some of the things we worked on when Larry Hogan was elected governor. I can remember we had we've often invited MDOT secretaries to come to our board meetings, and MDOT Secretary Pete Ron recently confirmed in 2015 came to our board meeting, and he said there will be a shift to roads. We are going to invest more in roads and highways. And that's, I think Governor Hogan ran on that both times and was elected both times. But that meant we had to pivot and advocate for the things we care about differently, because the governor in Maryland holds a lot of cards, has a lot of influence over transportation.
So you all may have switched the lexicon a little bit too, right? Waited a little more to roads than you had the prior 8 years.
One way we shifted was we were doing a lot of work to promote transit-oriented development, which I think we're going to get into today. And we focused a lot just on directly advocating for transit in the last 8 years, because we were concerned about disinvestment.
Right. Yeah.
And if there's no T, there's no TOD.
Right. So instead of just sitting back and aligning with the governor, you could have been talking about the Baltimore Beltway Road expansion or something, right? Or, but you decided, hey, we've got to double down on transit when there's not a voice out there.
Yeah. We still have our mission, and we need to support things that align with improving the environment, improving equity and economic development. And so we still choose, the projects are still the ones that we believe will. The projects we get behind are the ones we believe will support those outcomes.
If you look at Maryland's future and you see what's happening at Strathmore Square in Montgomery County, huge TOD, transit-oriented development. I think it's the biggest one in Montgomery County ever approved. You see Owings Mills, you see a leader like Julian Jones using a word, using the phrase TOD more often than many other elected officials. You look around the state and you say these places that Maryland is ultimately going to become, right? Mobile, socially diverse, demographically diverse. The place that Maryland's going to be already has some of these assets, right? These TODs. So if we know the future's going to be there, why are we having such a tough time, you know, getting more than one TOD or two TOD designations in Baltimore County when they have plenty of metro and light rail stops? When do you see, how do you see that all coming back into balance?
I guess, you know, when I think about TOD, you know, we're talking about development, right? So that's built things like houses.
Yeah, we should say, what, right? I should break it down for you, break it down for the audience as well. Like, talk to me about what a TOD means to you.
So we're talking about development. That's the D in TOD. And that means built things like houses, apartments, stores, offices, but also streets, sidewalks. And the oriented part means development is always oriented to some kind of transportation, how we come and go from these places. And we can see ship-oriented development, like if you go and walk the streets of Fells Point in Baltimore, you know, that was built around people living near and working at the harbor and getting there on foot.
Right, or Trade Point Atlantic, Sparrows Point. Yeah. I get it.
If you've been to the new airport in Salt Lake City, That's being criticized as being very airplane oriented, meaning it was built more for airplanes than people because you have to walk these incredible distances to get between gates and stuff. But most of everything that's been built in this country since World War II is auto oriented. And so that's why you look at the front of a house and you see garage doors and you look at, you know, an aerial view of a city and you see lots of parking and streets and things. Transit oriented means it's appealing to come and go by transit. It's easy, it's convenient to come and go by transit. And that's, you know, the predominant form of development. Most things that are built is auto-oriented. And when we build that, that serves coming and going by transit, but it also further reinforces that. I mean, coming and going by car, and it also further reinforces that. And so it's like a self-perpetuating thing. The more we build like that, the more we drive, the more we want to build like that.
Yeah, when I worked in county government, I was so stunned by how critical like getting the state highway access permit was to a retail project. And if you couldn't have this like giant access in for the car and the giant access out for the car, they're like, we'll go to some other subdivision with big strip centers and we'll do it there. We don't need to be here. So they had like this cruel leverage, even though nobody really wanted to be in that kind of future, you know?
For sure, yeah. And I worked for 5 years for Carroll County Government and Development Review and saw that as well. And the access permit was a big deal. And, you know, as a planner talking about considering walk access or transit access, those were very much, you know, second thoughts at best. It was primarily the concern was how are people going to come and go by car? And if there was a bus stop, it was, you know, way out at the edge of a parking lot or something like that. But we can flip that and we can make it more attractive to come and go by transit. And where we have transit infrastructure, we have trains running frequently. It's a great opportunity. And so those developments you rattled off, like Strathmore along the Metro Red Line in Montgomery County, Owings Mills Metro Center along the Baltimore Metro Subway in Baltimore County, there's private sector interest in building more stores, more housing. In Owings Mills, you've got the public library and the community college. You've got restaurants. You've got a hotel. You know, you've got all kinds of things that want to be close to that transit access. And that, I think, is a great way forward for Maryland to grow while not destroying the bay or destroying our air quality if we can have more of that kind of development.
What do you think is the biggest benefit to the taxpayers on TOD? Do you think you could really get some significant traffic mitigation if you're able to change the mindset in the Baltimore, or improve the mindset in the Baltimore area about creating more transit oriented developments?
I think some of the benefits you'd see are reduced infrastructure costs and infrastructure maintenance costs from more compact development. It costs us a lot to spread out, you know, miles and miles of sewer and street and sidewalk and stuff. So if we're more efficient land use wise, we're more efficient infrastructure wise, and that saves money. Another savings is commute time, that people spend less time, not just commuting, but also doing the weekly shopping and all these other things. And so they have more time. They also have more disposable income because the cost of owning and maintaining a car is a big cut out of your household budget. And if you can reduce that cost, you have more disposable income, you have more time, you can support local businesses. And so it generates economic activity in your community.
What do you think are some of the biases against TODs?
Well, there's always resistance to change, and what we're used to is auto-oriented development. And so it's human nature to come out against the bike lane that's proposed, or whatever new or different thing is proposed in your community. Especially for homeowners, I think, because they have not only an emotional attachment, but they have a financial investment at stake. And so there's a fear of the unknown if it's happening near you.
What do you think the government's got to do at the state level? What do you think the governments have to do at a local level to create an environment that can, you know, encourage more of this mindset shift?
There's two really basic fundamental things governments can do. One is run more transit, and the other is get out of the way. So running more transit means it's much more marketable to build TOD if you have frequent transit. That gives the people the freedom to come and go when they want. So if you're trying to do TOD along the Mark Camden line and there's only three trains in the morning and three trains in the evening, that's tough. But if you're doing it on the light rail that runs every 15 minutes, pretty much throughout the week, then you have a you know, more foot traffic, more people, more ability to come and go. The other factor is getting out of the way, and that by that I mean we have regulations in place that make it hard to do TOD, to make it hard to build it.
So TODs are not immune from NIMBYs, right?
For sure, big time. Also, parking minimums. It makes sense to rethink parking minimums, especially close to transit. Why require it? We're building in. We're forcing people to drive by saying you have to put all this money into this parking infrastructure, so that people will come and go by car when there's, especially when you're close to transit. We should make it easier to build things with less parking and better access to transit.
I always used to think Ryan Dorsey, the council member from Baltimore City, that his anti-parking animus on social media was like, you know, just a little too aggressive in of an advocacy point in such a picayune area, let me just say. But having worked on development projects, so if you're pro-developer, you're pro-community, like parking's a problem. It's just, it seems to me like every major project from downtown Columbia to National Harbor to stuff I've worked on in Northern Virginia, so many good ideas go to the trash can because they don't meet some local ordinance on 1950s style parking.
You've probably seen it. There's a ratio of, it's like 10 to 1 or something of parking spaces per car in this country. You know, so there's many parking spaces for every car that exists. And there's also, people have done analysis of like how much surface area in a city is devoted to surface parking. And when you devote land to surface parking, you're not getting the sales tax and, you know, corporate income tax and other revenue for
the yeah, downtown Columbia. There's literally in the master plan, it says convert surface parking lots to, you know, vertical mixed use parking and, you know, retail housing environments.
Yeah. And that, you know, that helps revenues to the local government, but it also helps the look and feel of the place. You know, it's much more attractive to walk by storefronts, people sitting at a cafe or restaurant than it is to walk by a parking lot.
Boiling hot cars, right?
Yeah. And yeah, you're right. Like the heat island effect, you know, it's better for the environment too.
I want to riff with you a little bit, which I'm sure makes you a little nervous, but I would love to riff with you a little bit. But before I do that, you know, we're in the midst of the legislative session here in Maryland. You gotta imagine you have some priorities you want that audience in Annapolis to know about. If I'm not putting you on the spot, this would be a great time to share them.
Sure. Well, a big one for the Central Maryland Transportation Alliance is the establishment of a Baltimore Regional Transportation Authority. That would be to govern the Maryland Transit Administration, the buses and trains that run in Baltimore County, Baltimore City, Anne Arundel County, and a little bit in Howard County. Right now, that's the MTA is just a unit of state government. It has no board. It's governed by only the governor. And of the 50 largest transit systems in the country, we're the only one like that. We're the only one that answers to just one governor. Most of them are run by a regional authority. And we want to transition to that here. There was a work group that studied that, that came out with recommendations the first Friday in December. And we're watching for that. That work group had both Delegate Tony Bridges. It was chaired by Delegate Tony Bridges and Senator Mary Washington. And so we're watching them because our sense is they're going to take the recommendations and turn them into bills. And we're ready to look at those bills and see what we can support. So that would be a priority. I think Delegate Jazz Lewis has legislation related to transit-oriented development. And so we're taking a look at that as well.
Cool. You know, now's the riff moment. So I've got this little hashtag on LinkedIn called My West Side. And it's really, it's like My West Side. So it's not the typical Baltimore border-to-border West Side. So it really is the Patapsco River Valley, which is working man's Port Valley, right? It's not the Green Spring Valley with all the fancy folks up there. But so I'm doing sort of a SWOT analysis through the lens of the church where I was baptized and I first met Martin O'Malley at my granddad's funeral, which is St. Joseph's Monastery. And so they're trying to continue to grow and succeed there. They've got some amazing opportunities. They have some real challenges. When you kind of come out as a hometown kid, you're raised in these environments that say this area is not good or this area won't come back. As you get older, you see that when neighbors work together, they can pull things together. Here's where I'm going with this. I looked at the 21st century schools that Senator Ferguson and Brooke Learman and all these people put together, Antonio Hayes. If you visit those schools, total game changer, right? All around the city. Then I go to West Baltimore and I see the MARC train station in West Baltimore, and I see the housing product around it and I see the neighborhoods around it. Man, it's special. It's better than I ever remember it. It looks good. Things are happening. Then you dial out of West Baltimore and you see not just the port, you see 95, 295, MARC train, you know, MTA. It just is this network hub right there in West Baltimore. If I'm an advocate for my West Side, what do I need to be talking about in the transportation space that's going to really kind of connect? You know, if I got for once a little juice with the new governor or the state senator, and I want to see my West Side flourish from a transportation angle, what can I be talking about?
Run transit more frequently.
That's more so that for in that area. Let's talk that nuts and bolts there. That means get the MARC train back and forth to Washington more frequently. That may mean what? A couple more runs, a couple more.
It does mean that. It means buses too. Are you familiar with the MTA 163 bus?
No.
That launched a year and a half ago. It's an express bus that I think it originates at West Baltimore Mark Transit Hub, stops in downtown, and then gets on the highway and runs express to Trade Point Atlantic.
Ah.
Since that opened, the boardings and alightings at the Trade Point Atlantic bus stops have tripled. So ridership is growing. And I think that's just the power of connecting neighborhoods with low-skill and mid-skill workers to a place where you have a high cluster of low-skill and mid-skill jobs.
You see what he just did there? He said, get out of your old parochial Baltimore, my west side thinking, and you're going to connect. You want my west side to succeed? Connected to the east side job creator, right? At Trade Point Atlantic, right? That's fair enough.
Jobs are regional, right? Most, you know, we want to create jobs in these neighborhoods in Baltimore City, but the job market is regional. And so we want people to have access to jobs in 45 minutes or less. We don't want people to be enduring grueling commutes to get to where the high opportunity jobs are. And it so happens that there's a high growth in high opportunity jobs at Trade Point Atlantic. By that I mean entry level with a decent wage, opportunities for advancement. And so we, you know, connecting people by transit to those jobs is powerful, but it still takes a long time to get to where a lot of the jobs are. And so we look at, you know, the story in this country for transit ridership has been really one of decline since about 2014. It was rising for a few years
off there. A cliff during the pandemic.
Off a cliff during the pandemic. A lot of places are building back from that. But even before the pandemic, most places were going downward. A few exceptions to that are Seattle, or more close to here, Richmond, where they saw bus ridership grow. And the recipe for that success was they ran service more frequently on the most popular bus routes. And in Seattle, that was the city of Seattle paying the transit agency, saying, we're going to invest in running these five lines more frequently. And they picked the lines. And in Richmond, VCU, both as the university and the hospital system, bought transit passes for employees and asked the transit agency to run service more frequently on the busiest route. And they've seen ridership grow. And I think we could do something similar. We could run buses more frequently and the MARC train more frequently that connect those neighborhoods on the west side to the regional job market.
So I'm Father Mike. I've heard about this red line for many years over there on the west side. It's supposed to connect Johns Hopkins, Bayview on the east side of Baltimore, all the way across to the home of like Center of Medicaid, Medicare Services, Woodlawn, where Social Security is a huge job. I believe that still is. Magnificent job center over there on the west side. I don't know what the pandemic has really done to that, but that's what the red line was supposed to do. We heard from the governor-elect talk about reinitiating this as a priority in some way, or at least that was my perception of it. What am I to think if I'm Father Mike, been hearing about this red line? I know it was defunded. You know, is that something I should be talking about? Should I be focused more on the regional transportation authority as a vehicle to get more transit? I guess what I'm saying is, if you're a community member in West Baltimore, is there a way to advocate for the red line where, you know, you're putting your energy in the right place?
We were supporters of the red line from our founding, and it was canceled in 2015, and we protested its cancellation. But we were always advocates for the entire transit system and improving the bus network at the same time that we were planning to build the red line. It was a shovel-ready project in 2015. It had gone through environmental review, countless hours of community.
Shovel ready 5-6 years before this huge transportation infrastructure infusion is coming down, right? Yeah, I mean, keep going.
Yeah.
So like it was ready then, before, when we didn't have any money.
So you know, I think Father Mike, a citizen on the West Side, should be asking for both. We should have an investment in that east-west spine, the red line, and we should have improvement in the bus network. And you should be asking, how quickly can we build the red line, and what can we do in the immediate term to improve bus connections to jobs and healthcare and grocery stores and all of that. So maybe that's a cop out, but I'd say they should ask for and deserve both. As far as the red line question, I think, Governor-elect Moore's people, the MTA need to be talking, and I know they are talking with the Federal Transit Administration about what's the path forward? What can we use from that shovel-ready project? Yeah.
Is that really what it is, right? Like, what could you claw back?
Yeah, I know our two senators, Cardin and Van Hollen, put in language with the big infrastructure bill, trying to make sure that if we want to get back in line for that huge federal grant to build something like that, we should be considered to get back in line rather than having to go all the way back to the end of the line. But that still has to be worked out and negotiated with the federal government. So there's a lot of questions. And I'm confident that the Moore Miller folks are asking those questions and are going to figure out the best path forward.
I got a tough one for you. So Jim Rouse created this model integrated community in the center of the most successful state in the union. It has become the most integrated, prosperous, safe community in America, according to several publications. And yet this place that's the second biggest city in Maryland, Columbia, downtown Columbia, is without transit, in a sense that urban people think and believe. Obviously, it was a city that was designed for the car, like we talked about earlier. Despite Rouse's best intentions, he was a pioneer, but he was a realist. Is there something that those people out there, like, now we have a lot of multifamily housing, where you got young workers going to NSA, you got young workers working at Tenable, doing cyber work in downtown Columbia. Anybody who knows me knows this is Columbia is like a fixation of mine professionally. What should they be talking about? Like a BRT to NSA or a BRT to, like, what should people out there, in your professional estimation? I'm a young 20 something cloud engineer with Tenable, and I'm saying, I want transit. I want to look and I want to connect less like a suburb and more like a city. What do you got? What should I be doing, Brian?
Yeah, great question. So Columbia is an incredible story. I love hearing the stories of the, like, first generation of people who grew up in Columbia in an integrated community that was, that was definitely groundbreaking for the late 60s and early 70s when they started marketing those houses and the steps that they took to intentionally.
I say, you know why it's the most prosperous small city, the safest small city in America? Because it was integrated from day one. That's why.
I love that. So, but they were built at probably the zenith of this country being auto-oriented, right? And that seemed like that was the mode, and it truly was. And we've spent decades since the late 60s building everything auto-oriented. But I think for the 21st century, Columbia needs to reposition and integrate with transit as well. They have these great walkable communities. They have a lot of
100 miles of trails.
Yeah.
Cool stuff.
To make it work, but they need to connect. And so I think they should be encouraging the formation of the Regional Transportation Authority. Howard County has been at the table. They
got a lot of say these days. They got The most powerful member of the legislature, and Guy Gazzoni's, you know, they've got some real stick to swing out there, you know, for the whole region.
Yeah. And so we looked to, you know, we looked to County Executive Ball's leadership for talking about regionalism and the way forward for the region.
New president of MACO. That's a big force. Everybody's coming into Howard County now. They see the power of it.
And they're building bus rapid transit connections south. You know, they are
to Montgomery County.
To Montgomery County.
That's big.
That's big. I think they're in a position to be, I mean, what a great position to be connected to two major metropolitan centers.
Can I ask you what that might feel like? So like I could get a bus in downtown Columbia, bus rapid transit, BRT. And these buses are, you know, are not what a lot of, say, Baltimore folks think of when we think of buses. It feels more like a DC, if I don't want to say DC transit experience, but it feels like more of a transit experience than an old-fashioned bus experience, right? But how many stops would it take? How long would it take for me to get ballpark from like Columbia to Bethesda Medical Center or something? Or
yeah, you've stumped me there. I don't know that one off the top right of my head.
But it's a BRT is, you're not a bus sitting in traffic on 95, right? You got your own lane.
You're on 29 and you've got your own lane and you've got specially marked stops. There's fewer stops. So you're not stopping every block.
Right.
So
you might stop at a hub, like a hub or a corridor hub.
Yeah. At least for that one. Yeah. I don't know the travel time, but the idea is to be, separated from traffic. That's a key ingredient. That's the key difference between regular bus and bus rapid transit, is that it has a dedicated lane that allows it to move free from traffic.
Let me play devil's advocate with you on this regional authority, because that's great advice. Because I'm like, tell them you want some transit out there. It's nice to have a professional opinion. I wanted to talk about the difference in my mind. Like, there was a big eruption in this is more about roads than transit, but there's a big eruption in the Washington corridor about whether they should have these expanded lanes. And you know, it's like one of the biggest issues down there. The governor got his highway expansion approved in some modest increments, but you do that same project up here in Baltimore, nobody even like talks about it. It seems like we widened I-95 up north. We widened like down by Catonsville with these extra lanes. And the Baltimore area constituency doesn't seem to get too revved up about the expansions of roads. What does that mean?
Well, we go every year the Baltimore Regional Transportation Board, which is the board that has the mayor has a seat, the Baltimore County Executive.
Is that related to the Baltimore Metropolitan Council, right?
Yeah. They're like nesting dolls.
Regional,
like,
right. Exactly. Like they're,
BRTB and BMC are kind of very closely related.
COD, BRT. We got it all today.
All the acronyms. So I think what the listeners need to understand is that's a board that has, you know, the mayor has a vote, the Baltimore County Executive has a vote, the Howard County Executive, Anne Arundel County Executive, all the regional county executives, as well as state. And they approve how we're going to spend all the federal transportation funding that comes to this region each year, each summer. And we've been going and testifying at those and organizing sign-on letters, because our concern is, you know, I think 2 years ago we were proposing to spend 650-1 on new highway capacity versus new transit capacity.
651-1 roads to transit, right?
Yeah, that's new capacity. So expanding. So if we keep doing that.
Wow. New capacity, 650-1.
Yeah. And we're it's
to the future, the road.
Yeah.
Not the transit, to the future. 650-1. We're putting our money in that.
That was a couple years ago. It's still over 500-1.
Wow.
That's just flat out wrong, in my opinion. It's not meeting the challenges of the 21st century. It's not the direction we should be going in. And it's going to lead to more driving. It's going to lead to, did you see the Chesapeake Bay Foundation came out with the State of the Bay yesterday? We get a D plus again. And a big part of it is they say,
talk about people fighting the last 8 years and not getting the due they needed.
We converted 95,000 acres from like 2013 to 2018 of farmland and forest land in Maryland to asphalt and development, right? And that is creating more runoff into the bay and harming the bay. And so we need to, you know, and if we're spending 500 to one on new highway capacity, widening highways versus new transit capacity, we're going to keep doing that. We're sort of stepping on the gas to do it even more.
Yeah.
So, our argument has been, we should be spending more on new transit capacity. Let's connect more people to jobs by transit. Let's support more transit-oriented development. We need a major shift.
Last question. Jim Shea, lifetime public servant, master lawyer, friend of a few O'Dohertys. Talk to me. He's just retiring, passing the baton as the city's solicitor. So his last job, he chose not to be the chairman of, only be the chairman of one of the great firms and lead your organization. But then he went on to go uber local and be the city solicitor. So I've got a special soft spot in my heart for anybody that closes with a big local effort like that. Talk to me about what Jim Shea has meant for transportation in the Baltimore region, what he's meant for you.
Well, thanks for that opportunity. I didn't know you were going to ask that, but I'm glad to have the chance to thank Jim. He was our founding board chair at the Central Maryland Transportation Alliance. I was hired a year after the organization was founded. So I worked under Jim's leadership until he stepped down. I'm forgetting the exact year, but he was there over a decade. And he did step away temporarily to run for governor. He made transportation a big part of his platform. I think even when Ben Jealous won the primary, he adopted a lot of Jim Shea candidate's platform for transportation. And he's been supportive of me. I've worked for the organization now for 14 years. It's been a major part of my career, and I'm grateful to Jim and the board for the opportunities I've had there. But also, I learned a lot from his leadership, how he runs a meeting, how he speaks publicly about the issues. And of course, his example of going into public service is an inspiring one too.
Well, thanks to Jim Shea. Thanks to Calvin Ball. Thanks to Julian Jones. Thanks to Aaron Tamarchio. Thanks to all the people around the great Baltimore region that are working to connect people to their families, to their lives, to their workplaces of work. Thank you, Brian O'Malley. Thank you to the Central Maryland Transportation Alliance.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Damian. I look forward to following the podcast.
Sorry about that, Shea.